The Hills will take NAFI to court. There's been another fatal HEMS accident. And the NTSB says if helicopter medevac needs to cost more to be safe, so be it. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, September 28, 2009. A battle which has torn the flight instruction community is headed for the courts. Sandy and Joanne Hill, founders of Master Instructors LLC, have filed a copyright infringement and unfair competition complaint against the National Association of Flight Instructors for allegedly copying the Master Instructors program the Hills say they created during their more than 25 years serving as volunteer directors for NAFI. Also named as a plaintiff in the suit is Rich Stoll, who created a master aerobatic instructor program based on the Hills' work. Attorney Adam Thurston says his clients, the plaintiffs, are seeking both an injunction to stop the NAFI master instructor program and damages. Quote, "It's not just about economics for the Hills. It's a matter of principle and justice. NAFI is clearly copying their materials without permission or attribution." Unquote. This case may be about to teach us some of the finer points of applicable law. We'll keep you posted. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating the crash of a medical emergency services helicopter near Georgetown, South Carolina, Friday evening. The Eurocopter AS-350B2 went down about 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time during a positioning flight after dropping off a patient in Charleston about 2 hours earlier. All three people on board died, including 45-year-old pilot Patrick Walters, 42-year-old flight nurse Diana Connor, and 39-year-old flight paramedic Randy Dove. Instrument conditions were reported at a nearby airport just prior to the crash. In a statement, the operator, OmniFlight, says it, quote, "is deeply saddened by the tragic loss of its crew members and wishes to express its deepest regrets and sincerest condolences to the families and friends of those who lost their lives," unquote. NTSB Chair Deborah Herzman has offered recommendations for providers of HEMS, or Helicopter Emergency Medical Services. The recommendations follow close scrutiny of the industry by the board after a 2008 season in which it saw 12 accidents, 8 of which produced 29 fatalities. NTSB wants the existing helicopter emergency medical services reimbursement rate structure reviewed to determine if higher levels of reimbursement are required to increase the level of safety. The board also suggests development of minimum safety accreditation standards for HEMS operators that augment FAA minimum requirements, including scenario-based pilot training, implementation of pre-flight risk evaluation programs, formalized flight and dispatch procedures, safety management systems, and the installation of FAA-approved terrain awareness warning systems, night vision imaging, flight data recording systems for monitoring, and autopilots if a second pilot is not used. In a letter to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Celebus, Herzman further suggests that once the new accreditation standard is developed, Medicare reimbursement for HEMS be limited only to those HEMS operators who meet the new standards. Up next on ANN, the KCX battle is about to be rejoined. GA groups ask their new congressional caucus to speak out, and NASA says it has found water on Mars. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for September 28th. I'm Paul Plack. The U.S. Air Force needs a new fleet of aerial tankers, but the hotly contested battle between Boeing and Northrop Grumman for the contract to build them has twice ended in stalemate. Back in April, Defense Secretary Robert Gates told Florida Today things would be a little different on the third try. A cooling-off period would allow the heated politics to calm down. The Pentagon would take over management of the contract battle from the Air Force. A new request for proposals would be issued, and Gates predicted we'd have a winner by the end of the summer. Proving just how hard this all is, summer has now officially passed, and the DOD is just now getting around to issuing a revised RFP. Deputy Defense Secretary William Lynn promises it will be a little less gray this time. Quote, This time we'll be crystal clear about what we want and what the bidders need to do to win. First of all, we'll look at price from a broad perspective, not just acquisition cost. We're going to include certain aspects of life cycle cost, in particular fuel burn and military construction. And we're going to look at non-price factors, particularly how each aircraft that the companies might bid would meet warfighting requirements, unquote. Lynn also suggested that process oversight is being handed back to the Air Force. Quote, the Air Force Source Selection Authority will execute this strategy, unquote. Boeing has responded that it will make a detailed analysis of the proposed RFP before deciding whether its tanker bid will be based on its 767 airframe or the larger 777 freighter. Northrop Grumman suggested months ago it would be back with its offering based on the Airbus A330. The Pentagon now says it expects to award the contract next summer. In the meantime, the KC-135 fleet soldiers on. Some analysts are predicting that the last of the Eisenhower-era planes will not be retired until the type's 80th birthday. The shock waves from that September 17th USA Today newspaper attack on general aviation are still reverberating. There's a new aspect to the latest challenge in the GAPR war, a U.S. congressional caucus on which the industry can lean. A letter sent to members of the U.S. House Aviation Caucus by the heads of NBAA, GAMA, AOPA, EAA, HIA, and NATA urges them to sign a Dear Colleague letter written by Representative Sam Graves, a Missouri Republican, reminding all members of Congress the importance of general aviation and GA airports. The letter reads in part, quote, as you know, the Airport Improvement Program provides funding for the planning and development of public-use airports listed in the National Plan of Integrated Airport Systems. Such airports are considered to be significant to national transportation, unquote. Graves goes on to point out some specific contributions of small airports to commerce, emergency services, and disaster relief, and their role in avoiding the need to mix GA operations with airlines, enhancing the public safety. NASA says its Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter has made a major discovery, water on Mars. MRO photos showing fresh meteor impacts on the surface in the middle latitudes got the attention of scientists when they revealed what appeared to be bright ice on August 10th. One patch was large enough for one of the orbiter's other instruments to confirm it's water ice. In the days since, the ice has sublimated into the thin Martian atmosphere. NASA says that during a typical week, the context camera returns more than 200 images of Mars, covering a total area greater than California. The mission team has found more than 100 fresh meteor impact sites. Still ahead, no, you can't land at Giants Stadium even if you're the mayor. No, you can't land in your front yard even if it's a helicopter. And a pilot dies at El Mirage, but not in his aircraft. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800- for Cessna.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, September 28th. I'm Paul Platt. New Jersey state troopers apparently were not amused when New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg showed up for last Thursday's U2 concert at Giant Stadium in his helicopter, landing in a shuttle bus parking area. The mayor himself is a pilot but was not flying it on this run. His pilot, Toby Wilson, was said to be making a practice landing. No action was taken against Wilson after he promised New Jersey troopers he would be dropping the mayor off but not returning to pick him up. 37-year-old Sean Wagner has landed his Blue Robinson R-44 helicopter at his home in Davie, Florida before, and some of his neighbors apparently would prefer to live their lives without the added noise and risk. The South Florida Sun Sentinel reports that Wagner has been cited by local police for violating residential codes. In earlier cases, the FAA questioned Wagner's judgment, but said he had not violated any of the federal air regulations. It's not clear whether the residential landing was done by Wagner or another pilot. Wagner just became a student pilot in March, and neighbors say the landings on his lawn started about the same time. Wagner told the paper he was declining comment on the advice of his attorney. And finally today, the annual Ken Brock Freedom Fly-In wrapped up yesterday at the El Mirage Dry Lake Bed in California's San Bernardino County. Anybody familiar with the off-highway vehicle area managed by BLM knows it's a pretty crazy place, but also one of unique beauty. Our group from Utah pulled into camp at 3 a.m. Pacific time on Friday morning, so we tossed our sleeping bags out on a tarp on the lake bed and fell asleep under the clearest skies and brightest stars I've seen in many years. The event is named after the late gyroplane kitmaker Ken Brock and focuses on experimental gyroplanes and helicopters, but a little bit of everything turns up for the event. Despite the eclectic mix of aircraft types and an anything-goes atmosphere that tends to draw fat ultralights and self-taught pilots, Chapter 1 of the Popular Rotorcraft Association has done a good job of improving the safety of the event compared to its earlier years. 2009 was going great until Saturday afternoon. Mike Shulman, who for years was the president of PRA Chapter 15 in Arizona, has been a fixture at El Mirage for years, always arriving days before the official start of the event. Mike has been the unofficial community alarm clock, waking campers up each morning at 6:30 a.m. with low passes in his unusual Subaru-powered single-place gyro. He was all packed up and ready to head back home Saturday afternoon after spending much of his week in the air. With his rig staged and his dog waiting for him, Mike was offered the chance to borrow a friend's BMW dual sport motorcycle for a quick run across the lake bed before he headed out. As was his way, Mike made a pretty hot pass. According to emergency responders, he was probably somewhere north of 90 miles an hour when he hit a berm and went airborne. They say he never regained consciousness. The banquet in the hangar at the Brock Ranch Saturday night was a somber event as Mike's friends shared anecdotes about a retired prison warden who is sometimes grumpy, quick-tempered, and hard-headed, but just as quick to pull out a spare chair if you came by to talk, and determined to spend his last moments in this world as an action figure. He almost did that 2 years ago at El Mirage, but walked away from his total gyro after a blade hit the ground during a low maneuver over the lake bed, and Scratch built a new machine in time for the following year's meet. Gyroplanes have an undeserved reputation as dangerous aircraft. Operated within their envelope, they're the safest form of powered flight. Unfortunately, they also seem to attract pilots determined to ensure that their last moments on the planet involve huge dust plumes and autopsy results with high levels of adrenaline. This weekend demonstrated, at least for me, that it's not gyroplanes that kill pilots. It's more often the other way around. El Mirage is a wild place to play, and lots of what happens there would be completely inappropriate in a structured airport environment. Lots of people will look at what happened to Mike this weekend and say, it's a shame. And I can agree, but I also hope in this era of lawyers gone wild that we don't snuff out the last refuge for people who believe that if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much room. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves talks about several proposed changes to Part 61 and Part 141 and applauds the FAA for all of them. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.